Alright, welcome back to the Hurt Locker. Before we get started, we want to thank Freedom Internet, our main sponsor for the podcast, for all things residential and commercial internet, and to keep you and your family's online experiences fast, safe and secure, go to freedominternet.co.nz, helping build communities in New Zealand. Before we get stuck into the round 5 review, we want to get stuck into how our Hurt Locker Fantasy League is going. So we'll go to our overall standings. In first place right now is Ronan G with 3,267 points. Joe Fatai is at second with 3,242 points. Ollie Curtis, my boy OC, is in at third with 3,229 points. Get Clapdools at fourth. I have no clue who Get Clapdools is, so DM me whoever you are, because you're also the top point scorer for the round. And he's got 3,150 points. And Tevin Anitaleta at fifth, also who was Par Road's captain, at 3,123 points. So it's a tight one between the top five with 144 points difference from first to fifth. Now let's get stuck into the round 5 review. For game 1, we had the Hurricanes beat the Highlanders by 2 points, 20-18. The Hurricanes only gained 346 meters that game, with the Highlanders gaining 655 meters. If we go over to the turnover stats, the Hurricanes had 10 turnovers with the Landers only 5. And then the Canes were down to 14 with their yellow and conceded 10 penalties, which is, you know, if you compare it to the Landers' 8 penalties, it's actually a mixed bag of stats. So, I mean, with the tightly contested point range from 20 to 18, it's no surprise that those stats were actually quite close in the end. If we go into that game, Punivai's yellow card was a weird one. He gets sent off with a yellow, even though he was already going off with his HIA. I actually have no clue what the rules are in that situation, but if a player does go off with an HIA, and with things like the TMO looking at plays like that in slow motion, it doesn't really make too much sense, because it's not like he was sitting there waiting for Tava Tava Nawai to come in and shoulder him straight in the head like he did and get knocked out. So first of all, hope Punivai recovers from that well, and hopefully the ruling changes for situations like that. In this game, both teams didn't hesitate with the threes, just built their scoreboard pressure, and it differs from teams like the Blues, because as we know, they want to kick to corners or set some set piece. So as we can see here, building that scoreboard pressure is obviously big for teams outside of guys like the Blues. Lips was built different. I think we already knew that. He had the angle on Ruben Love, still managed to smoke him on the sideline. So that change of direction, his pace, yeah, it's crazy. And we're going to be talking to him tomorrow night, so stay tuned for that episode. All right, halftime was 11-8 with the Landers in the lead, but then at the same time you also had to figure that it might swing around at some time, considering on the bench for the Canes we had Lomax and Almua, two All Blacks sitting there waiting to jump on. Fabian Holland, holy heck, he had himself a game. 23 tackles, 10 carries with two defenders beaten. That man works off the chain. Strong start for the Canes 2 minutes into the second half. And I think that, to be fair, built their base for the W. At different points throughout that game, Nathan Hasty was showing up Rogard. He played bloody good for someone that, you know, he not really is one that will be considered top up there with the All Blacks halfbacks, but he definitely showed how good he is in this game. For the Hurricanes, Baylen Sullivan's positioning and awareness was clutch, especially at times like the 75th minute. He spots an overlap and, you know, Tatlea got on the outside there, but who swings around? It was Baylen. If we go over to some of his stats, he had 6 tackles. He did miss 4, but when you consider that 12-13 combo is Tava Tava Nawa and Tanilu Tatlea, I mean, kind of reasonable. He had 9 carries, 5 defenders beaten, 1 clean break, and he also got 1 turnover. So it's a huge shift from Baylen Sullivan. If you go over to the other side of that and the forward pack for the Canes boys, Duplessis Kariffi, holy heck, that man is pushing for that Black 7 jersey. He had 7 carries, 1 defender beaten, 24 tackles, the top of the Hurricanes tackle chart. He won 2 turnovers, 1 on the try line, which was huge for their win. And there was a new stat that came out that their assistant coach had interviewed today or yesterday, and he said that his smart mouth guard picked up 100 contacts in the game, which is huge, and I think it's almost a record for that. So yeah, that was a good game for round 1 to set the tone for the good round of that being round 5. Let's go into game 2 for the round, which was the Brumbies versus Fiji Drua. Fiji Drua go down by 17 points. Brumbies get up 38-21. And honestly, Brumbies just dominated right across the board for this game. And luckily they did so because they did play at home over in Canberra. If you go over to the meters gain, 492 meters to only 329 meters for the Fiji Drua. The Brumbies had 127 carries compared to that of 119. 28 defenders beaten to 18, which is quite surprising for Fiji Drua, because usually they are the team to either evade, offload, or beat defenders. 9 clean breaks for the Brumbies compared to 7. So, I mean, that stat's pretty close. But the big stat really really is the Brumbies had more offloads than Fiji Drua. And if you go into the stat book, the success rate for the Fiji Drua, especially in regards to kind of making sure they capitalize off their line breaks, when Fiji Drua offload, statistically, their chances of executing line breaks increases. So obviously it goes hand in hand for the Drua. When they offload and play their Fiji touch style of footy, they tend to be more successful. The big thing for the Drua this game, they missed 28 tackles, which just is too much, especially if you want to be winning in this close tight Super Rugby Pacific this year. The red card issue at the end of the game, I mean, that was a weird one. The bro pretty much threw a right hand at the Brumbies guy, but I mean, he got carded. So I haven't seen what the judiciary ruled that yet. I don't think it'll be too much off. I don't think he would have got time off for that. But I mean, a red card was pretty necessary for that. Len Ikitau got a hat trick this game, and his early work really paid off for him. He's probably one of the best strike centers in the world right now. He got a quick, and then he goes off to get a quick pop pass to line break, and that finishes his second try for him. And then he goes over to his third try where he gets his hattie. His positioning was way off. He wasn't even supposed to be outside Anthony Muirhead, but Tom Wright, as he's been doing this whole preseason, makes line breaks left, right, and center, goes through, and then the ball finds Muirhead, giving it outside to where Len Ikitau was positioned. So I'm sure we're going to see him in a Wallabies jersey come the British and Irish Lions tour this year. Lonergan also capitalized off a lot of Len Ikitau's strike, and he obviously went in for a try off that. If you go over to Fiji Drua, Longani Masi is honestly a magician. His stats were pretty crazy from this game, and his stats the whole season really have been pretty nuts. 13 carries, 103 meters, 3 defenders beaten, 3 clean breaks, and 5 tackles with about 3 missed. So, I mean, 3 missed. So the ratio is obviously not good for the tackle rate, but making 5 tackles as a wing is obviously still a pretty good effort. If you go to Len Ikitau's stats on the other side, 3 defenders beaten, 1 clean break, 3 offloads, 9 carries, 7 tackles with 0 missed, which is huge as a 13. I think that really separates the best 13s from the average because they don't miss tackles. And then obviously, like we said before, he got his hat trick. The Brumbies now sit at 4th on the table and the Fiji Drua sit at 10th. Let's go over to game 3 where the Crusaders beat the Western Force 55-33. Now to some quick match stats. The Crusaders got 590 meters this game versus only 378 of the Force. The Satyrs had 146 carries versus only 108. They had 40 defenders beaten, 17 more than what the Force had, 16 clean breaks versus 4, which you could obviously see highlighted in the highlight package released this week, and 23 missed tackles compared to 40. If you look at the possession of the game, Satyrs played 27% of the game from the halfway through to the Force's 22. And so if you compare that statistically to minutes played, I mean, it's roughly 20 minutes of just defending pure Crusaders strike and phase play, which I don't think any team in the Super Rugby right now could survive. And we're going to see how the Blues survive that coming this weekend if the Satyrs continue to play possession and territory like that. The Satyrs also jammed 50% of the game between both 22s. And so keeping that kind of possession and field play right in the middle, look, obviously that's why we had guys like Braden Eno breaking through the center. And then you had guys having a field there like Civil Reese and Macca Springer on the outsides. When the Force did have the ball, 36% of the time, it was in their own half. So, you know, they just got pretty much suffocated in that game. But they did stick in well, especially that first half. They really hung in there. Like I said, the Force held on well for the first 10 minutes. And, you know, their floodgates really only opened in the second half. But the Crusaders' ball skills, they're just too good. And I don't actually think any team could hold the Crusaders to 0 points or barely any points when they execute those ball skills. If you look at Seville's first try, most teams will actually fumble those front door, back door plays that they're doing. But Taha got it on the inside 15-meter line. He threw it over to Tom Christie's pod. There's a backdoor to Havili, a quick pop to Enor, quick pass to Macca, who was on the left wing, getting this on the right side of the field, who passes it over to Seville on the other side of the 15-meter line. They played the whole width of the field with quick ball, which I don't think a lot of teams could do right now. And even though those things and those situations happened, at halftime, the score was only 20-18. So, you know, the Force didn't hold back. And I think Fine Lelewasa, the halfback for the Force, he was huge. He kept them together and he was a gel between the forwards and the backs in regards to trying to keep that face play going for them. Because when the forwards decided to work, especially close to the line, the Force did well, keeping them moving along. And, you know, with guys like Greeley at the back, no wonder why when the forwards get good platform, guys like Lilywas, they can swing it out to, you know, those guys like Greeley. In the second half, Mecca Springer. Yeah, that is X factor if you haven't seen it before. His coordination is crazy. He got the ball on the sideline, did a banana grubber and catching it off the roll, and then beats two defenders to go in for that try. So he obviously wants to keep that 11 jersey on his back. Ioane Moananu was huge when he came on. It's quite funny listening to the commentary. You hear it's sad, and I mean, I'm not mocking them, but when they say Moananu, they go, Moananu, I don't even know how they say it. It's just some weird way they say it. So hopefully Justin Marshall and Nisbo realize that they're saying his name wrong. But he looked like a center when he came on, even though he was playing at proper hooker. But when he came on, yeah, his ball skills. I've seen him before. He tried to do a chip and chase one of the earlier games in the season. So Ioane is one to keep an eye on, especially if you're in fantasy, because if there is any injury, I think he's going to slot straight in there and he'll be a good pickup with how he moves around the field. Will Jordan's 70th minute try was huge. I mean, by no surprise, it's Will Jordan, and I don't think many of us are really surprised at what he does. Anytime he gets the ball, he's just magically in the right spot at the right time and always finds his way past the white line. Xavier Saifuloi, holy country, what a debut. His lines were good, and that try that Will Jordan got was actually off the back of a no-look pass. And so for a young debutant to be throwing the ball at the back like that, that obviously shows how confident he is in his skills and ability. So like I said, even in our preview earlier in the year, he's in for a big year. The winger for the Force, Harry Potter, he's obviously played some really well for the Wallabies as well, but he's done some wizardry stuff. I mean, that try he got was pretty crazy. And if you go over to some of his stats, he pulls over some crazy moves. Going over to player stats, I'm going to cover the back three for the Crusaders because I think it's important to see how hard they worked. I think every single one of Will Jordan, Sivu and Maka got over 100 points in fantasy this week. So good on you for those people that managed to get them on their sides or trusted to get all three from the same team on their side. Will Jordan went in for 15 carries, 86 meters run, 4 defenders beaten, 2 clean breaks, 2 turnovers, and he had 4 tackles and 1 try. Sivu Reese, 2 tackles, 132 meters run, 15 carries, 7 defenders beaten, 5 clean breaks, which is huge, 2 offloads, and obviously his Haddy. Mecca Springer, 50 meters run, 13 carries, 3 defenders beaten, 3 clean breaks, 1 offload, 1 turnover awarded, and he matches the Super Rugby record for the most amount of tries in a game with 5 tries, and I think that matches to the late Sean Wainui. If you go over to the Force players, Matt Greeley, the outside back, 8 carries, 4 defenders beaten, 1 try. He obviously had a good shift, especially for a team that ended up getting humped in the end. Will Harris, the back rower, shit, he had a shift. 10 carries, 2 defenders beaten, 1 clean break, 1 offload, 43 meters run overall, and 13 tackles, which is obviously, like I said, a good inning, and I think he's earning that Wallabies jersey. The Crusaders sit at 2nd on the table now with a bye, and the Force sit at 8th even with the Canes, but obviously with the 31-point differential, that puts them below. Over to Game 4, we have the Chiefs beating the Blues 32-31. Let's go to some of those match stats. The Chiefs had 43% of the ball, and the Blues had 57%, so they got more possession in the end. But when the Blues did have the ball, 25% of the time, it was in their own 22. So obviously, that shows that they were just trying to exit and get out of their own half for a quarter of the game. But 11.6% of the time, they had the ball from the half to the Chiefs 22. So, you know, for a fair chunk of the game, at least 8 to 10 minutes, they had enough opportunity to strike at that time. The Chiefs, on the other hand, they played 28% of the game with ball in hand and in the Blues half, compared to only 12.4% that the Blues had in the Chiefs 22. So I think those stats alone show that just opportunistic-wise, I don't even know if that's a word, but opportunity-wise, the Chiefs had more chances to get that strike going. So, I mean, 32-31 is still a good score. And, you know, I mean, if Xavier gets that kick in the end or just before the 80, the Blues pip this game. Going over to the other stats, for meters gained, the Chiefs had only 294 meters in comparison to the Blues with a massive 554 meters. If you go to the turnovers conceded, the Chiefs only had 10 with the Blues having 16 turnovers, much too many. And then if you go over to the tackles, the Chiefs made 226 tackles and the Blues made 130. So the Chiefs in that game made almost 100 more tackles than them. Kicks in play, the Chiefs kicked the ball 34 times with the Blues kicking the ball only 27. And I think that might actually be surprising for a lot of you, because when you think about the Blues and the way they play now, especially from 15 to 15 on both sides, for 10 to 10, they tend to do that high sky bomb, which is, I mean, quite prominent in a lot of the Super Rugby teams now, but especially in the Blues, guys like Harry Plummer, when Zion comes back in, him and Bodie, they tend to do that sky high ball, trying to make that 50-50 high ball opportunity. And so it might be surprising to see that the Chiefs did kick the ball more in play. Now, penalty goals. This is an interesting one. So we obviously went over to the turnovers conceded, where the Blues had 16 in comparison to the Chiefs 10. But if you go to penalty goals, the Blues attempted zero penalties this game, which is quite surprising because it ties into the Chiefs having 9 penalties in their half, in the Blues half, and 6 penalties within their 22. So 5 of those being within the 15s, there were 5 opportunities really that the Blues could have taken to kick a penalty. Now, I do understand their decision, because in situations like when Arcoy got sent off, you know you're resting 14 people because he got the cheese. Corey Evans dotted down in the end. But I think it might be time for the Blues to change their decision-making when it comes to penalties, because if they did kick at least, let's say they kick 3 of those 5 penalties in that game, then they get 9 points there and the Blues end up winning 40-32. So, you know, I respect the grind and the way they want to play. It's a real gritty style kick to the corner, try and dominate with their line-out mauls, etc. But just with how the season's going for them right now, it might be better off and more beneficial for the Blues to start kicking for goal. Now, for the game notes, shooters behind the back early in the game, holy country. D-Mac and shooters combo is obviously still lethal, but that behind the back pass was crazy, and that's just pure skill. I think Justin Marshall's reaction in the commentary box was it directly reflected what we all thought. I mean, that was just nuts, especially with the first game back from Japan. He comes in and slots back in like he's been playing in the Super Rugby this whole season. Xavier Rose stats, that guy was pushing the pace the whole game. I mean, he was bloody good. And to know that Xavier Rose starts and then Cortez Ratsima comes on in the second half, the Chiefs have it lucky there. Plummer's ball to Tuleta. So Plummer, just before the half, that was a pivotal shift in the game, and that was a momentum shift, I reckon, for the Blues, because nothing was happening. Riku Ioane obviously got into contact, managed to wiggle his way to some room at the top, offloads it off to Plummer. Plummer slides along and throws. And honestly, Plummer was on the outside post there and threw it out to Tuleta, which, from what I remember, was probably about 5 meters from the touchline. That's a long pass, so that's some straight skills from Harry Plummer. But that shift was good, and that actually kept the momentum in the Blues' favor going into the second half. D-Mac is going to get absolutely shied on for his horrible decision with the white line fever at the 55th minute. If D-Mac doesn't go in for that and try and slot in, which I think was between Perifeta and Riku Ioane, he just gives it to Shooter. Shooter gives it out to Bumfa, and Bumfa goes in for a try easily. So I'm sure the coaching and staff will catch him in the whiteboard session. Finlay Christie coming off the bench, he was huge. If you look at the 64th minute, you'll see him barking at the forwards. In fact, Dalton Papali'i was actually on the ground. So, look, Finlay's obviously huge, not only for his skill set, but his leadership coming on. If you have your halfback and that's their job to bark at the forwards to get up and work, I think that's huge for the Blues going forward. And I actually think he should have started that game. But when he did come on, he obviously did what I just talked about, but he also gave the Blues a bit more width in their play style. Overall, it was a bloody test match-like game. It's good to see Perifeta get a little click in for the first time in a while. But, you know, at the same time, the game could have gone either way, and we just have to remember that both teams were rocked by late changes. Anton Leonard-Brown dropped out late just before the game, so obviously Daniel Lorona went into 13 with Gideon Rampling on the bench. And obviously they have no Wally as he recovers from his knee. Ofa Tuongafasi, Caleb Clark, and Cameron Sofoa obviously went out just before the game as well. And that's when Tristan Cook gets to go on for his debut and was Xavi's debut. Now, Xavi was huge this game. If you look at Xavi's stats, he had 11 carries, 2 defenders beaten, 1 clean break, 1 offload, and 5 tackles. He obviously got shown the cheese that game for accidentally getting in the way of the 9, which was I seem an accident, but professionals make it look like an accident. So if he did do that on purpose and just didn't get away with it, that's a professional move from him. But that was a huge debut, and that's one of the better debuts we've seen from a youngin trying to show his way and trying to earn his way and earn his stripes through his rugby career. So big ups to Xavi, and we'll try and get him on the potty before the end of the season. Kurt Eklund for the Blues as well. He was huge. He topped the tackle count for the Blues with 12 tackles, and that was with zero missed. He had 11 carries, one defender beaten, and one offload. Now let's go over to the Chiefs players. D-Mac had a huge game, as we said. 8 carries, 6 defenders beaten, 1 clean break, 1 offload, and 1 try. And then Tupouvahi, 10 carries, 2 defenders beaten, 1 offload, 1 try, and 13 tackles. I think Toops is obviously just earning that All Black jersey right back. And I think we all will agree here that he earns and does earn that black jersey. So going over to the last game of the round, the Union's version of State of Origin, the Reds go against the Waratahs, and the Reds smashed them 35-15. If you go over to the match stats for the game, it was 5 tries to 2, 164 carries compared to the Waratahs' 127, 8 clean breaks compared to 4, 10 offloads compared to 5, and the Reds had 54% of the possession in this game, and 38.8% of that time was in the Tars half. So the Tars only played 14.3% of the ball in the Reds half. So honestly, that's pretty much suffocation at that point. If you go to my game notes, the Tars started perfectly with the liner on the 5 phase play, and then the former West Tiger Tristan Riley dots down in the corner. And you know, that was a huge start, and I thought the Waratahs would get some momentum off that, but obviously, as the pendulum swings, it ended up turning back in the Reds' favor. The try in the 20th minute, that's going to be a huge learning for the wingers. I do understand Callaway's shot on Wilson gets him sent off and he gets shown the cheese. And with Jorgo on the other side and then obviously Tristan Riley on the other, they're definitely going to learn that when someone goes off, especially if it's your fullback, and yes, he is Mr. Experience, you still have to fill in that gap. Because they learnt the hard way with Hedemaya Murray looking at the space behind, chipping it to the back, running in the backfield, and scoring under the post. So I'm sure those two boys will get shit on in their whiteboard session, but I'm sure they've also learned a big lesson from that game, and they also understand that Hedemaya is just the wrong guy to leave space. The Waratahs really couldn't handle the Reds' maul package. I mean, the try showed just before the half that any time the Reds got up, started that maul, I think it's usually like Fraser McWright or Harry Wilson or Taniela at the back. They just couldn't handle it, and so they just kept dotting under or at least building a platform for some good phase play. I think this, for the Reds, Fraser McWright, that jersey battle for the Wallabies 7, Fraser versus Carlo Tozzano is huge, and I want to do a little bit of a stats reference here, but I don't have them in front of me. If you want to go look at it, have a look at Fraser McWright's stats for the last couple of games and compare them to Carlo Tozzano's. Those two have just been going head to head for that 7 jersey, and I think that's really healthy for the Wallabies going forward. And now I do understand they have the British and Irish Lions tour, so even if they spread it out this year, it's going to be good to see for the Wallabies. The Reds forwards work together with more fluidity, and I think that's actually what won them the game clearly, because up front they got the W and that paid dividends for the rest of the Reds boys. And yeah, it was just a statement game. They just have to show up against a Kiwi side now, the Reds, because they've beaten all the teams outside. It's just a game like last week where they faced the Kiwi side and went down 43-19 to the... But I mean, to be fair, it was against the Crusaders. The Reds now sit at third on the leaderboard with the Waratahs at fifth, 1 point the difference. Going over to some of the player stats, Harry Wilson, the Wallabies skipper, 15 carries, 1 defender beaten, 1 offload, 1 try, 1 turnover and 22 tackles with 0 missed. A huge shift, and that's what you would expect from a Wallaby skipper. Fraser McWright, like we just talked about, 7 tackles, 1 turnover, 11 carries, 2 defenders beaten and 1 try. And Hunter Paisami, 11 carries, 2 defenders beaten, 1 clean break, 1 offload, and 7 tackles with 0 missed. Now, if you go over to what we talked about before with Len Ikitau, he also had a high tackle count with 0 missed. I think this is going to be a good 12-13 combo, I'd say, for the Wallabies. So they're looking really strong, and I think this competition is going to build a lot of confidence for the Wallabies coaching and management crew to build together a good squad, because I think I understand now that they've got a good midfield and they've got a good back row. It's going to be interesting to see how they build going into that British and Irish Lions series. Going over to the Tars boys, Lawson Crichton, the 10. He had a big game. 10 carries, 3 defender speed and 1 offload and 4 tackles. Jorgo, Max Jorgensen, who's obviously going to be a Wallaby. 6 tackles with 0 miss, which is good. That's what you want to see from a Wallaby. 1 turnover, 1. 8 carries, 2 defenders beat and 1 clean break and 1 offload. The former West Tiger, Tristan Wiley, 3 carries, 2 defenders beat and 1 clean break and 1 try. That's big from him, and so I think he might be forcing his hand as well to get into the yellow jersey. That's all we have for the Hurt Locker's round review. Remember, for our fantasy league, if you're not in, just flick me a message or anything, and I will send you the link to join in the league. Can you send us also any feedback you have for the podcast? And tomorrow night we'll be shooting with Caleb Tungitau, so stay tuned for that. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, go over to the ratings and give us a rating and leave 5 stars for the boys, because that will help us a lot. If not, thanks for tuning into the Hurt Locker. That's our round 5 review done.